Welcome to On the Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have comedian Shane Smith. This is the first time I had a chance to meet Shane, and it was really great to sit down and talk with him. Shane is fairly new to the stand-up scene here in Salt Lake, but I've just seen his name all over the place, and really wanted to find out more of who he is and where he kind of got his comedy roots started. Shane's only been on the scene 9 months, and he just recently won Club 50 West's comedy competition, and also was a runner-up in Wise Guy's comedy competition just a few months back. So it was really intriguing to me to see, you know, a new face on the comedy scene that's just kicking ass. Don't forget, coming up next week, 1 week from today even, September 16th at Club 50 West, On the Mic Podcast is live with special guest Hello Sweetie and opening comic, today's guest Shane Smith. So you are not going to want to miss that. Again, show starts at 7:30. Tickets are just $5. And big news on some of those giveaways. We've secured an awesome prize just for coming to the show. You'll be automatically entered to win a pair of multi-passes for Salt Lake Comic Con coming up September 24th through the 26th at the Salt Palace Convention Center. You're not going to want to miss that. I mean, your chance to get up close and personal with some of your favorite, you know, stars from the comic book movies. Chris Evans, Captain America. He is coming to Salt Lake Comic Con. So, I mean, you come to the live podcast recording next week. You know, you're entered to win. You win a pass, you might get to see Chris Evans up close and personal. Also, myself, Hello Sweetie, all of us are part of the panels at Salt Lake Comic Con, so you're not going to want to miss that anyway. So, yeah, come out, come see us, and then come see us again at Salt Lake Comic Con when you win that free multi-pass. Again, tickets are just $5. Club 50 West, Salt Lake City, next week, September 16th at 7:30. Thank you to Radio From Hell, who had me on the show this morning to promote the show. It was a lot of fun. I always love going back there. As a lot of you know, I spent some time there as an intern. I've gone back and helped produce some of the shows for Sundance. And I absolutely love Radio From Hell. Carrie, Bill, and Gina are always fun to be around, always very welcoming. So it was a pleasure to be able to go on the show today and promote the upcoming On the Mic podcast, Club 50 West. As some of you heard the podcast last week with Alex Watson, I've had the pleasure throughout the last week to be working on Alex's new film, Take Me Out. It's an awesome horror film that he's put together. The cast and crew is just amazing. It has been so much fun working on this last week. If you haven't had a chance yet, check out that episode. And also, go check out their GoFundMe page. You know, they're not asking for a lot, but, you know, every little bit helps. So go check that out. GoFundMe.com/TakeMeOutHorror. And yeah, donate a little there and help get this movie finished. As I mentioned, Salt Lake Comic Con is just a few weeks away, September 24th through the 26th at the Salt Palace Convention Center. I'll be there doing a bunch of panels. We'll also be recording a live episode throughout the building, so maybe we'll come talk to you. If you see us out and about, come up and say hey, maybe we'll talk to you. Yeah, there's a lot of great panels that I'm going to be a part of. I'll be posting my schedule later on site, on Facebook, on Twitter. You can also see it live right now on saltlakecomiccon.com. Just type Tim Drake into the guest field and it'll pull up my schedule on there for you. An idea of some of the panels that I'm going to be a part of. I know I've got one on, I believe, Friday the 25th. It's a look back at the 40 years of Saturday Night Live. I'm really excited to be a part of that one. Also, our disabilities in pop culture that we started at FanX back in January. That panel is coming back, as well as ones for The Muppets, Supernatural, the Ninja Turtles. I'm really excited to be doing a panel for the Ninja Turtles. I never thought I'd be a part of something like that, so I'm really excited to be a part of these panels. So yeah, make sure you stay posted on onthemicpodcast.com, or if you're following me on Twitter, at Tim Drake, or on Facebook, I'll have all the details there. And plus, you'll see all the cool pictures from Salt Lake Comic Con, and you're not going to want to miss out on seeing all that, right? So I hope I see you guys definitely this next week at the live recording at Club 50 West here in Salt Lake City. Again, tickets just $5. Show starts at 7:30. Hello, Sweetie. Shane Smith. You're not going to want to miss this show. And then, of course, make sure to come see me at Salt Lake Comic Con the 24th through the 26th. And yeah, it's going to be a great time. I'm so excited for everything coming up. Also, I'll be in Los Angeles October 4th through the 7th, recording a bunch of different podcasts out there. I've already got a few guests lined up that I am incredibly excited about. It's going to be a lot of fun to get out there, go out and record, attend a few events. Can't wait to show you guys what we've got set up for those Los Angeles shows. But it's going to be one hell of a time, as it always is in Los Angeles. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Shane Smith. Again, so much fun recording with Shane and getting to know him. And yeah, I mean, if you guys come to the live show, you're going to get to see Shane live in person. So just another reason to come. So enjoy this episode with Shane Smith. Salt Lake, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I did it on Monday.
Yeah, I saw Chris tweet out that, like, if anybody had questions for you, and Chris and I somehow, we haven't done it in a while, but we would always end up booking, like, the same people within, like, a week. And so I sent him a text and was like, dude, when are you releasing yours? Because I didn't want to run into it where, like, when we had Melissa Merlot on, both of us released within, like, 4 days of each other.
Oh, really?
So we had to start kind of coordinating to figure out when each person was going to be on. That's so we didn't so release them a few days.
Oh, man.
So I'm glad that you were able to make it, because I've seen you all over the place.
Yeah.
Through Wise Guys, I've seen, you know, some of the... Because I know you do the Dungeons and Dragons of comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
With Nicholas Don Smith. I see all this stuff, and I'm like, who the hell is Shane? Like, I had no idea who you were, and then I start seeing you winning all these competitions and at least placing in them.
Yeah.
Like, with the Wise Guys one, and then you just won the 50 West one.
Yeah, yeah. I made it to the top five of Wise Guys, and I won 50 West, so...
Yeah, so I was just I've got to find out more about Shane, because I don't get out to the open mics nearly as frequently as I used to attempt to, more or less.
Yeah. Oh, man. And so it's
like
so
I see some
now.
Of these new names popping up, and I'm like, I've got to find out who some of these new comics are on the scene.
Right. Well, I guess I am new. I'm pretty new. I started, like, what, last December?
Yeah, so that's only, what,
less
9 months
year.
At this point?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're definitely fresh on it, but I mean you're killing it, obviously.
Yeah, I had like I don't know. I planned it all out, and I had done like, you know, like 3 open mics or whatever before I really committed and started working on it. So I kind of had like an idea of what I was going to do and a battle plan laid out.
Yeah.
So I just attacked it and like did my thing. But yeah, I'm new. I'm way new, man. There's so many guys have been doing it so long that are so good here in Salt Lake. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, super intimidating. But, yeah, man. I still don't even know how I keep getting opportunities, you know? Like, people are like, oh, you're all over the place. And I'm like, dude, I don't understand it. I mean, I'm cool with it, but it's craziness.
It's just it comes down to the hard work. I mean, from everything I can see from, you know, social media that you're doing, I mean, you're busting your ass out there. So, I mean, it's all coming in turn of just how hard you're working it at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Comedy is my number one priority. I always have people that are like, there are a few comics who have like been doing it longer than me, and they'll be like, how did you get on such and such show? And I'm like, well, I go to all the open mics. And they're like, well, but I go to open mic every week, most weeks. And I'm like, I don't go to every open mic most weeks. I go to literally every single open mic basically that I am allowed, that I can. I go to 3 open mics a week, like,
wow,
without fail for almost a year straight, on top of every show I go to, and then working on non-comedy projects or podcasts or writing, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of work involved.
Yeah.
If you aren't willing to, like, sacrifice your social life and not hang out with your friends, or, you know, not have jokes ready and be really tired and go to open mic and eat shit on purpose, then you're not going to get better, you know.
Yeah, that's the greatest thing you can learn from doing that many open mics is the writing process and figuring out who you are as a comic.
I think some of my best open mics are the ones where I literally go and I just have nothing prepared. I haven't written anything new. It's comics only at the mic, and they know all my jokes, so I can't just tell my old jokes and work on those. And so basically, I just get up there, and I talk, and I'm not funny, and everyone hates it, and then I get off, and I'm like, well, you know.
Yeah.
But I sit up there with the microphone, and, you know, even having feeling standing on stage with a microphone in your hand is going to make you better, you know.
Yeah, and it gives you, I mean, yeah, just standing up there talking through things sometimes.
Yeah.
Is sometimes all that you need. I mean, I remember one time Jay got up at open mic, Jay Whitaker, and he wasn't so much as getting up to perform anything.
Yeah.
He was getting up simply to just get stuff off his chest. It was a really, really emotional week.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just needed to get up and talk.
Yeah, man.
He did a bit at the end, but most of it was, he just needed to get up.
Yeah. And sometimes even, I mean, and I've had days like that where it's like therapy. But I've even had days where, like, I think that even just standing up there with the microphone in your hand silently while everyone stares at you and being awkward is going to make you a better comic than if you had not gone at all.
Yeah. It's like, so, the photosynthesis of the thick skin.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, basically. And so, yeah, I treat comedy like the gym, kind of. It's like, you know, you just, you go even if you're tired. You go even if you don't want to. Like, it's not, it's, sometimes it's type 2 fun. You know, yeah. That, do you type 2 fun? Are you aware? Like,
I'm not.
So, here's a thing, like, in the, like, community, like, workout community or, like, climbers and mountaineers and stuff, there's like type 1 fun, which is fun that's just like fun immediately. Okay. I play video games, it's fun right away. Most video games I play, you know, I play a board game, I make out with a girl, it's fun right in that second. Then there's type 2 fun, which is like, it was really difficult and parts of it were like strenuous and I wasn't having fun, but the payoff was worth it, and it was fun at times during it. And so that's kind of like open mic. I'm really tired. It sucked, but I made myself go. And then I laughed and had a good time and it was fun. Then there's type 3 fun. This is the last type of fun. This is where it's not fun at all during whatsoever. It's not fun to plan it. It's not fun to go. It's not fun to do it. And it's, but afterwards, you're really happy that you did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, if you went and climbed a mountain and your friend died and you had the, and it was the worst experience of your life and you almost died and you were miserable, but then 10 years down the road you had this incredible story and this memory, and type 3 fun. So a lot of comedy for people is type 1 fun, where it's just fun right away. It's like that crazy thrill being on stage is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sure you, like, I mean, even just releasing a podcast would probably type 1, either the second people listen to it or tell you, yeah, to listen to it, that feels so good. But type 2, most people, they stop at the comedy bill once it becomes type 2. Like, oh, I'm tired, I'm just not going to go to open mic today. Or I'm uncomfortable, I'm just not going to do this. And a huge amount of my comedy experience has been type 2 fun. So, and yeah.
Even with the type 2 fun, I think with the type 2 fun, you learn how to eventually make what is the type 2 fun into that type 1 fun.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like the struggle. You're always trying to knock it down a level, be tougher, be better, be smarter, be faster, so that you can turn as much experience of what you're doing into type 1. So, yeah,
it's the evolution of fun.
Yeah, because, like, for me, like, if I go do, I keep bringing it back to fitness, but whatever. I worked out today, I'm on it. if I bring it back to, like, a really hard CrossFit workout, for me, it could just be type 1 fun. But I could definitely find a person that it would be type 3. Like, it would be life-changingly terrible for them, you know, they would hate it. But, so everyone has their, you know, their limits, and so, I think, for me, being good at comedy is like bringing everything down to type 1, even the uncomfortable situations. It's been pretty good.
I would say. I mean, that's a really cool way of looking at it. I've never heard anybody kind of describe it that way. And I mean, even as you were describing, I had just a million different things that, like, I'm doing every day where I'm just like, where do I classify that?
What? Yeah, yeah.
Is that type 1? Is that type 2? Where, I think that's such a cool way to gauge it too. Yeah. I think to even self-evaluate what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, if you're happy with where you're at with each project. And I mean, not everybody is insane enough to take on a ton of projects.
No.
So, I mean, you do it, I do it. It's what fulfills us.
Yeah, yeah. I like to be busy. I like to do a lot of stuff. But there's something about being self-aware enough right before you're going to do something. You're like, this is type 2. And then you're ready for it. Makes it so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, or type 3. The best is when you know it's going to be type 3. Because if type 3 sneaks up on you, it could wreck you pretty, you know. It could just end up being not fun at any point ever for you, you know. But
see, yeah. And when that type 3 does sneak up, I almost find it more comedic to me.
Yeah.
Because it's like you're not expecting that, and all of a sudden you're just like, oh, wow, this sucks.
Like, yeah. It's like when you're young and you're like trying to go on a road trip to a concert, your car breaks down, you miss the concert, your window gets broken into, it starts raining. You know, it's like the worst day of your life, but then 5 years later, you and your friend have this story.
The lyrics of half of Alanis Morissette songs.
Exactly, exactly. She's road tripping to concerts all the time.
So now how old are you? I mean, you seem like a pretty young guy on the
scene. I'm 28. Okay. So I turned 29 in December. So I'm not as young as I'd like to be, which I think most people feel that way. But yeah, I'm up there. I definitely didn't start early, that's for sure.
Which is fine. I mean, I think you talk to most comics. And I mean, I had a Spencer King in here the other day. And I've known Spencer for a few years now. He had been on one of my old podcasts. And we were talking about the fact of age and how, you know, sometimes starting later is better because you start gaining that life experience that a lot of really young comics don't necessarily have. Doesn't make them bad comics, but they just don't have that life experience that, you know, really helps kind of make sometimes the self-deprecating humor, or if they're doing, you know, observational humor, it helps them when they've had more to observe.
Yeah, also personality-wise. I mean, so many 19-year-olds, you're just like, okay, cool. You're like every other 19-year-old I've ever met. Like, I just spent so much time jacking off into the air, making fake, like, okay, dude, get out of here. Whatever you're saying is meaningless, you know? It's hard to take younger people seriously sometimes. And I don't want to be guilty of that, because when I was a young guy, I was like, old people don't listen to me. But then you get older and you're like, oh man, I did not know anything.
Yeah.
You know, or my personality was terrible. What I thought about, you know, this, and this was wrong, so... I'm kind of glad I started younger. I wish I would have started maybe like 4 years ago, you know, but it's all good. I'm happy with things now and they're going well. So
it's only starting in December. Mm-hmm. What was it? I mean, so basically you were turning 28 when you decided to,
yep,
to kind of make that jump.
My first show was 5 days before I turned 28.
Nice.
So I had like this wonderful people, Teresa and Doug Wyckoff. They were putting on the show. And they posted in the Utah Stand-Up Network on Facebook, which I had just gotten into. Someone added me to it, and I felt very validated, because I was like, I had been like I said, three open mics over the course of like, you know, however long, and I was terrible. I was trying to total it up. I had like 3 minutes of material total. And I asked my friend, they were doing the show, but the concept of the show was that, like, the audience would heckle you or on these cards and stuff and ask you relationship questions, so there's lots of improv. And I was like, oh, well, that, I can do that.
Yeah.
And then I asked my friend, I was like, should I do the show? It's a 10-minute set, but I think if I use the cards, I can fill enough time that I'll only do those 3 minutes of material that I have. And he was like, yeah, it's a terrible idea. You're an idiot. And so I did it anyway, and it turned out pretty well for me. And then after that, I was just so hooked that I had to keep going. And so then I started writing more and stuff. But yeah, I'm a terrible person, and I lied and said I had a 10-minute set when I didn't. But it worked out for the best, and we're all happy. So yeah. Oh, man, that show was crazy. I can't believe I did that. And the 3 minutes of material I had was so bad. So bad.
But it's writing that bad material. I mean, it's good to be able to look back on it and be like, oh, wow, like I just wrote absolute shit right there.
Yeah, yeah.
And be able to grow from that and recognize it. The problem is when you have that shit material and you don't recognize it, and then you just try to continue to build on nothing.
Yeah, that's brutal. I've seen, I mean, you know, I'm at open mics a lot, so I see stuff like that happening all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so many people with jokes, and you're like, that joke. But comedy's so subjective that you don't want to give someone advice and be like, your joke is terrible. Your joke is bad, and you should feel bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because maybe I don't like it, but maybe other people do, or I don't know. It's so tough.
I'll test out some on Facebook and Twitter and try to see and gauge by how many likes they get on how solid of a joke they actually are. And I had one the other day that I was just so sure was solid. And it tanked, and I was like, what the hell? I was like, I know that is a solid joke. And then I realized that nobody knew what one of the definitions of one of the words was.
Oh.
And so that's why it tanked. And like, I made a few of my friends, I was like, go look that up. And so they Googled the definition, they started reading, they're like, oh. And then I was like, now read the joke again. And they read it, and they're like, oh, that's fucking funny. That's And I was like, yeah, thank you.
Oh, man, I hate when that happens. I have, like, this one of my favorite bits I ever wrote. It was a really early bit I wrote with Batman. And, like, Batman, I do this Batman voice throughout the whole bit, which is kind of hacky, but whatever. It's fun to do the bit. The whole bit is, the bit is self-aware of the fact that doing an impression of Batman is hack. And so, like, I'm doing an impression of Batman because, like, it's the secret to being happiness or whatever. and I'm driving my ex-girlfriend crazy. And then the very end, she's giving me a blowjob, and then she just stops right before I'm about to finish, and she gets up, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And then she says, why so serious? Like the Joker. So funny. I love that joke so much. And then and the very last tag is, I tell my friend, and he says, some people just want to watch the world burn. And it's like the whole Batman setup, but it never does well at clubs or whatever. I've done it a couple of times. Not enough people know about Batman, so I'll have like two nerds cracking up, and then everyone else is like, "You're an idiot." But
I know the feeling they'll go in the nerd route, because I tried a Doctor Who bit one time, and I've talked about it a few times on here, and it bombed so bad. And I had a feeling it was going to, and it bombed so bad. And I told my wife after the show, I was like, if this was a different crowd, that would have killed.
Yeah.
And the very next night, we were actually seeing Chris Hardwick. And Chris made almost a similar reference in the same realm that I had gone. And it crushed. And I was just like,
yeah.
Yeah, I needed this audience for that joke.
Yeah. I know. I see professional comics all the time, or like working comics. And they have their fans. And I'm always so, so jealous of the creative license they have. Because they just get to do exactly what they want. They know who's coming to see them. And, they can just tell a story and not have to worry about laughs per minute. And people love it. And you're like, oh, man, I need that creative license. Yeah. You know, I need that deal with the crowd that they've already made unconsciously. So good.
I think some of the best advice I had really ever learned from some of the local comics, and then Jay Whitaker and I both had a chance when Bill Bellamy came through last year to kind of talk with him. And Jay was on all of his shows, and Bill gave Jay some great advice where, you know, he said, the audience needs to know who you are within the first few minutes of your set.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know who you are. And I was like, that's really deep. Like, yeah, who are you as a comic? And after one night at an open mic when I hadn't done too hot, I was talking to other comics, and they said, well, you know, the audience doesn't know who you are yet. You know, you can't go dark on something when the audience doesn't know who you are and they can't trust you.
Yeah.
And looking at, both of those pieces of advice, it made it where, as I looked at things that I'm writing and things that I work on, where it's like, okay, well, I need them to be able to understand within those first couple jokes, you know, what, not just the setup to the joke is, but the setup of who they're about to see is.
Yeah.
And that's what the payoff is in the end.
Yeah, for sure. It's so tough to get people to know you in this short amount of time in an open mic. That's the big issue, right? When you're starting out, is how do I get people to understand who I am in 30 seconds?
Yeah.
So that I can start working on, you know, 2.5 minutes of material or whatever. Ugh. Yeah, that's something I still struggle with sometimes. I'll go up and I'm getting better at, when you look at a room and you're like, okay, how's this room going to react to me the second I get up on stage? And then, there are times when I'll see the room and I'll be like, I have to do a joke right out of the gate about the fact that I'm covered in tattoos, or else they're not going to be listening to me and they're just going to be looking at me the whole time, wondering what's up with my tattoos. And I've ignored that instinct before, gone up and just went right into a bit and bombed completely. Because everyone was just kind of like, what is this guy's deal, you know? So, man, yeah, that's a tough part of comedy for sure.
Yeah, I have, we're getting ready to do a live show at 50 West in a few weeks here. I've been kind of building things up where I was like, okay, I know I have to come out before I bring out the guests for the show and at least do a few minutes at the top there. Just to kind of get everybody going. And I was like, all right, well, this is, for a lot of it's going to be a new crowd that I'm not used to.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I have to be able to introduce myself. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to go up there and basically introduce myself and just prove why I'm a jackass.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And just kind of let that be, because I was like, you know, these are people that they're paying to come in, but it's like they may have listened to the podcast here and there. They've definitely, because Hello Sweetie's the guest.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And so it's like, I know for sure, a lot of them will listen to Hello Sweetie. And so it's like, now it's just a matter of adapting their crowd to me.
yeah. Well, the Hello Sweetie crowd is probably pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're the best. I like those girls. Whole bunch of mega babes.
Yeah.
Talking about nerdy stuff. They're awesome. But yeah, man, I hosted my first show I've hosted open mics before, and I did really well hosting open mics. So I was, like, mega confident going into hosting my own show, Wise Guys. And I just, like, I was telling the comics, like, it's going to be the hottest room. I'm going to get the energy. Like, it's going to be so good. It's going to be, like, nerds. We're just going to have a good time. Do whatever material you want. Dude, I messed up the very first, like, I messed up my opener. I messed up, like, every introduction. The crowd was, like, really lukewarm and weird the whole time. So many of my riffs bombed. Like, oh, man, it was a brutal experience. So I was like, okay, hosting is a whole different beast. Like, I definitely need to get that under control.
It takes a while. Yeah. Well, it's like I've moderated like panels at Comic-Con and stuff. Like I've got some of that. And like we just did a live show at San Diego Comic-Con. And so it's like we've had, like I've had that time to adjust to the hosting part of it. But it's like now trying to host to the comedy element of it.
Oh, yeah.
Where, I mean, there was
they
one.
They expect to laugh.
Yeah, they expect to laugh. And that's where the kind of the extra added pressure comes on.
Yeah.
And it's like at San Diego Comic-Con, like that was a little nerve-wracking because it was like, all right, like this is a crowd where nobody's really going to know who we are.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just me and my producing partner.
So how many people came out for that?
We only had about 15, which is what we expected. I mean, it was a new thing that they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's super cool. Plus, you're at San Diego Comic-Con. Like, nothing bad can happen to you there. It's Neverland.
Yeah, it was a safe zone and
not Neverland Ranch. Just to be clear, everyone, no one's getting molested.
Yeah, that's not a safe zone.
We're talking about Neverland, like the go happy lucky place for the Lost Boys hangout. But
it was an experience where it was kind of like, you know, we didn't know what to expect.
Yeah,
and we were just thrilled that people came. Because it was like, yeah, we're trying to get the word out to come see this podcast that you guys don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And so we were thrilled people came, but it was the best thing was there was a wide age range there.
Huh.
And so being able to see, okay, like we're actually getting a good age range and that we kept everybody laughing the whole time.
Yeah.
And then like the fact that people actually came up to us afterwards.
Oh, so cool.
And talked to us. We were like, okay, like.
Yeah.
It made me feel so much better. And then like the immediate, like. It was the type 1 fun.
Yeah.
It was the people that immediately started adding us on Twitter and stuff. And it was like, okay, like that completely showed us, yeah, we made an impact. It was a small crowd, but we made an impact.
Dude, nothing makes me feel better than that. First, that, you know, the laughter's great, but the person coming up to you and telling you to good after.
Yeah.
Or that they enjoyed you or they liked a particular joke. So good. The ads on Twitter feel good. But I like when someone messages you. I've had a couple of people like message me on Facebook or whatever out of nowhere. People who are strangers and be like, "No, your joke like really meant a lot to me," or something you said on a podcast really changed the way I think about such and such thing. So rewarding.
Yeah.
Type 1 fun in its like ultimate form. It's like absolute vindication.
I had one of my good buddies the other day who would never listen to an episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
Until Chrissy Shelley's episode.
Yeah.
And he came up to me after that and was just like, "Dude, like, I was just having a shit day, and, like, that episode, you know, it was great. You guys just kept me laughing, and I was just like, wow, like, I don't expect any of my friends to necessarily listen."
Yeah.
But it's like, when they do, they don't ever say anything to me, really.
Right? Oh, man.
My friends don't think I'm funny. And so to have one of my friends, like, come up and say that, like, it was just like, holy shit, really? Like, you liked it?
Yeah.
Like, it felt like a girl in high school that would have come up and been like, "Your hair looks great." And then I'd been like, "Really?" And she's like, "No, I was talking to the guy behind you, actually, move."
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh. Oh, man. Yeah, my friends don't think I'm funny. My friends and family are not impressed by my comedy stylings. I have friends that I've made since comedy who think I'm funny because, like, the expectation is there. But all my other friends are like, "Yeah, you're kind of an asshole. Like, we don't think you're funny." Yeah, I've had my mom and my brother come see me perform a couple times. And, like, I don't think I've ever made either of them laugh. They've laughed at me while I was bombing, but I don't think any of my jokes have made them laugh. So, you know, what can you do?
See, I at least know I'm safe that none of my family will ever come to any show.
Oh, man. Are they very LDS?
Yes.
All right. Solid guess.
Yeah, so I know that they will never come. So it's like, I don't ever have to worry about letting them down because I did that when I was 15.
Yeah.
So it's at this point something that's taken care of.
Nice.
So, I mean, kind of leading back to where you made the conscious decision to do the show.
Yeah.
lied about your 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
When was it that you finally, I mean, you had done a couple open mics, but when was it that you were finally like, you know what, this is what, I'm just going to throw myself into this. What was the final defining moment?
Man, it was when I got off of stage on that show and everyone was just like going crazy. You know, everyone's that room was just full of people. And it like, and I had just done so well. It was like my favorite show to date, probably. And I just remember feeling like I was one of the better comics that night. And I was like, I want this more. Like, I need this feeling. Like, the doing really well, making everyone so happy. Like, I was just, I wanted to, like, shake everyone's hand. And, like, making people happy is just, like, a really cool feel. Like, making, like, you felt you made a difference, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the closest I can get to, like, I don't know. I'm not the person who's gonna, like, I don't want to go give shoes to the homeless. Like, yeah, I'm a dick, you know? Like, but here's the thing. Most people listening to this also aren't going out and, like, you know, volunteering for the homeless and stuff. They just don't say out loud, like, fuck that. I don't want to do that, you know? I'm not interested. And I'm not. I'm just not interested in a lot of that stuff. But I still want to do something good. And so I'll take this over nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Basically, it just makes me feel like I'm making the world better instead of just adding to all the bullshit, you know? And so...
And I mean, as trivial as people may think it is, comedy, I mean, it does have that factor where, you know, it can... And I don't want to, you know, sound all New Age medicine and like it's a healing factor, but I'll never forget when I was doing the My House on the Moon podcast. One of my high school friends that I hadn't seen in 9 years or so, I had no idea. She was living back in Illinois at the time, and I had no idea that she was just finishing battling cancer.
Oh.
And she had been reading all the stuff that we'd post and listening to the podcast, and she messaged me one day and was just like, look, I don't know really how to tell you this, but, you know, your show and, like, your... You know, the essays and stuff that you write, like, those have really gotten me through a lot of this.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, it was the ultimate mindfuck. It was just like...
Yeah, it's crazy. Because
that was the first time anybody had ever said anything like that. And that's kind of when I realized that, yes, you know, it takes a while to get, you know, paid or anything to do comedy or podcast or any of that as, like, a job. And even better than getting paid is knowing that, you know, something you said, you know, did affect somebody. And it did change them and it did... It just made them feel good for the day.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely the old... It's definitely the best feeling in... I think one of the better feelings in life in general. You know, affecting someone. But, like, without meaning to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do. And, like, it makes me happy. And then, oh, I made this other person happy. Or, like, changed what they thought about something or helped them. It's crazy because you think about all the people who have done that for you, you know. I think about, like, my idols or people I've looked up to or characters I've looked up to or things, like, books that have made, like, that huge impact in my life. And it feels so far away, like, I could never do that to someone else. And then when you realize you could, it's, like, this world-shattering, like, you know, experience, basically. It's crazy. It's awesome.
It kind of even cheesy. Makes you second guess your actions.
Yeah, true. And it's so cheesy that, like, you almost don't even want to say it out loud, you know, because other people hear you say it and then it takes away from it. But it's so awesome, man. It's definitely the best feeling. I enjoy it. It's like, have you ever, like, you know, when you just want to pat yourself on the back, but you feel like an asshole? It's like, it's like a free license to pat yourself on the back and be like, yeah, you know, like, I nailed it. So good.
I think, like I said, you know, it keeps you in check when you start realizing that.
Yeah.
And I had one experience just a few weeks ago where I was at the DMV, or not the DMV, the driver's license. Which one is it? Yeah, the DMV.
Yeah, yeah, that's the place with the driver's licenses.
And I was just getting something fixed on my car registration.
Yeah.
And the person standing in the next window was somebody that I had gone to, like, middle school with or so.
Yeah.
That I have not seen in at least 13 or 14 years. And he's just like, hey, man. And, like, it took me a second to realize who it was.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, hey, how's it going? He's like, dude, I see all the stuff that you're doing. I just love it. And it was just like, what?
Yeah.
Like, and that kind of kept me in check. It's just like, I'm in a driver's license division. This is somebody I haven't seen in 14 years. And if they're paying attention, I don't even know they're paying attention.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of puts you on that level where it's like, you've got to realize that whether you realize it's happening or not, people are watching.
Yeah.
And it makes you, in a way, be a better person to have to recognize, you know, if you, I mean, people have those heated moments that they don't realize, but it, even in those heated moments, kind of makes you check yourself and be like, you know, I don't know who's going to be watching. It's like, I mean, I'm at a very low level
of
anything like that.
Yeah.
And the fact that even then, like, somebody's like, hey, I see this that you're doing. And it's like, whoa, like, that's, you know, I really got to check myself, because if, I mean, by any means, this was to just continue to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't want people to have those stories like, yeah, when he was, you know, an absolute nobody, like, he was a dick to everybody. And it's like, yeah, don't want that.
You know, you don't want it. Have you ever thought about it on the flip side? Like, how many people's feelings you've hurt? And, like, so you don't even, the majority, we get, like, someone could be being really affected by you or think you're great or listen to something you do and think it's really funny and have a big laugh and it makes their day better and never tell you. And so on the flip side, like, what are the odds of you fucking up someone's day? They're going to tell you even less, probably.
Yeah.
So then I think, like, oh, man, like, how many people have, like, have I just, like, ruined over the course of a week or whatever and never even known it?
I honestly have gone through that thought process.
Yeah.
Like, when I was 20, 21, I co-owned a store at the Southtown Mall.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like, I was doing stuff like trying to get a good career going in the music industry. Mm-hmm. Like, I was managing bands, the store we had was focused on like local clothing lines, local bands.
Yeah.
And I was a 20-year-old punk. I was a dick.
Yeah.
And
I
did not realize it. I looked at it as, look how fucking great I am. I'm 20 years old. I own 3 businesses. You know, bow down. Like, and I look at it now, I'm like, why the fuck did you have that ego?
Yeah.
And I remember when I parted ways, like, it wasn't the best parting. And I remember reading a comment from one kid, and mind you, this is like 2006.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost 10 years later, but I'll never forget a comment from one person that was like, thank God that guy was an asshole, I'm glad he's gone.
Ugh.
And I was just like, and then, like, I recognized it, and I understand why he thinks that.
Yeah.
A little bit of it was validated.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I should not have had the reactions I had to ever give anybody that impression.
For sure.
And, like, I look back on it, and it's like, yeah, we would bring through a lot of bands. Like, you know, we had a good rapport going with a lot of people from the scene. But I look back, and I'm like, I know that I was just a douchebag to people. And it's like, luckily, I've been able to smooth a great deal of that over.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it took time, and it's like, that's something that, yeah, a lot of us don't recognize.
Oh, I'm in the same boat.
That we did that at the time being, because we were immature jackasses.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, yeah, I've had a ton of that in my life. Have you ever had any, like, hate mail or anything? For every, like, one person who randomly messages me and, like, is like, hey, you said a joke, or you, like, had this opinion on a podcast, it really changed the way I view things. Like, I think you're so great. And then I've had, like, one person anonymously message me and be like, you're a faggot, kill yourself, you know? Oh, like, I don't know if you've had any of that.
I had one at one point where a CD had been put out, and a band I was managing, we had one of their songs on the compilation.
Yeah.
And the person that put it out later asked me, I want your honest opinion.
Oh.
And I was like, my honest opinion?
Yeah.
And the compilation just was not good.
Yeah.
And I was I felt very cordial about how I answered it.
Yeah.
But they took just insane offense to it and got people to send me hate.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I was just like, I guess it is what it is. Yeah. Like, I mean, you could only do so much with it, but
brutal.
Yeah, it was just like, you asked me my honest opinion, and I didn't even give you my full honest opinion. Like,
oh.
But, yeah, I mean, it happens. And, I mean, the best you can do is learn from those experiences and figure out a way to, if you've wronged somebody, right those wrongs and grow as a person.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and also there's a certain amount of, like, you just have to be able to laugh at how insanely ridiculous it is to take time out. Like, I don't think I've ever, like, taken time to legitimately try to hurt someone's feelings on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, maybe on Reddit, sometimes people ask to be roasted on our Roast Me. I've been doing that for a while. But they're, like, asking for it, you know?
Yeah.
I would never just, like, really try to, like...
You wouldn't just intentionally troll somebody.
Someone took the time out of their day to, like, make a fake Twitter, find me, message me terrible things. They had to think about what they were going to say, and then, like...
I'm going to spend the next half an hour just to tell this guy to fuck off and die.
So much work. Like, I mean, I hope that they were at least, like, watching The Office. Or, you know, like, multitasking. They're on their phone making a Twitter account. Like, I'm gonna tell this guy how much I hate Jews, you know? Like, at least they're, you know, you being somewhat productive during their day. So great. Or she. I mean, there are plenty of women who have a lot of reason not to like me. But a lot of dudes, too, I suppose. But yeah, craziness.
I think one of the funniest, like, things of hate mail that I've recently seen is on Jimmy Kimmel last week. He did this... video.
I saw the video games.
Yeah, of the video games, because YouTube launched this thing where you can watch other people playing video games.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about the concept, is kind of a silly concept to log on to watch other people
play games. Are you aware of Twitch? Do you know what Twitch is? Oh, it's a... So watching people play video games is like a... It's like a multi-million dollar industry.
Really?
Yeah, watching people play video games competitively has always been a thing.
And see, like, I get the competitive part. Where you're learning from them.
But there are, like, personalities, basically. They're, like, late-night personalities. And then they interact with people, and they play games, and people are into it. So it's way less about the video games and more about the personality, because it's, like, just imagine, like, one window with the person, and you're watching them as a person play the game, and then they're interacting with everyone as they play.
Yeah, and that I totally get. Yeah. Somebody actually... bagged on Kimmel mentioning that, and he was like, and he even turned around and was like, no, that I get.
Yeah, but like,
to watch somebody just randomly play a game, like the way he portrayed it, like, the video was funny. Like,
I get where the joke, even if Kimmel's completely wrong, it's like, I get what the joke is. He's playing off the stereotype that, like, you know, gamers are lazy, games are one step removed from reality. You're double-stepped removed from reality.
Yeah, and then triple-stepped to quadruple.
Like, yeah, yeah.
It was funny the way he did it, but I loved how many people have, and I'll quote them by saying, they'll say, you're playing a dangerous game.
Yeah,
like, and I want somebody just to respond to each one of them and be like, at least he's playing the game and not watching somebody else play the game. Loved his each night, this last week, he's just gone through and read. Like, all the hate mail. And it is just, like, it's just a joke. Like, you realize this is a late night show, right? Like,
it's crazy that people, like, that you validate the bit when you all react that way.
Yeah.
Like, you could have just let the video, whereas Jimmy Kimmel's videos normally get, like, I don't know, let's say hypothetically a million views. You could have just, as a gaming community, been like, oh, that's dumb, I'm not watching. And then the video would have got, like, 10,000 views, and no one would have cared, and it would have been a flopped bit.
Yeah.
But instead, you're, like, creating even more content for him, validating his opinion, making other people validate their opinions. You know, it's just like, why are you engaging? It's so weird.
I think it's hilarious that people have engaged so much with it, to spend that time to write the hate mail.
If it offends you and you tell someone, you're just making it worse.
Yeah.
Like, how do people not understand that concept?
Yeah.
When I tell a joke and someone in the audience, like, yells out at me because they don't like, I'm about to just take this joke so much further only because you did that.
Yeah.
How do you not know that that's... Don't feed
the ripple
trolls.
Effect.
Yeah, yeah. Don't feed the trolls.
See, and like, I've told people on here a few times, I mean, I get the best hate mail of all.
Oh.
And it's random people on Twitter.
Okay.
That think that my Twitter handle is a parody account.
Wait, what is it?
Because my Twitter handle's just my name. It's just at Tim Drake.
Oh, and they think you're... Yeah,
they
when
think
I
think it's a fanboy account.
I thought that your podcast was like, at first, when you first talked about it, was a podcast that was nerd-centric because it was Tim Drake, and I was like, oh, cool, Tim Drake, Robin. Like, yeah. I had no idea that you just have one of the greatest names of all time, which is very cool.
Yeah, it does backfire from time to time.
So people troll you, they're like, you're not Robin, like, give up the name.
It's not even that. It'll just simply be, at Tim Drake, fuck you. And I'm always like, what did I do?
So they literally are speaking to you as if you're the character.
Yeah.
So, okay, so they think you're parodying the character, and they're replying.
They'll think that I'm doing that, or they'll just be mad that I have it, because...
Yeah, how did you... You nailed that. I am so surprised you even got it.
I was on Twitter very early on, and then I didn't use my Twitter for a while.
Dude, good for you. I bet you could sell your Twitter handle for quite a bit of money.
I could, but now it's starting to gain a lot of traction.
So. Yeah, no, don't sell it, but I'm just saying. Yeah, man, that's crazy. I can't believe you're... I even looked you up and was like, oh, no, it's not the real Tim Drake. It's got to be something else.
Yeah.
Because there's no way he has Tim Drake. That's so funny. And I'm a huge fan of the Teen Titans and Robin, so I like Tim Drake.
Yeah, it gets to be funny. And, like, when we did San Diego Comic-Con, the very first question, as we were just checking our mics, the audio guy right away is like, wait, so is this your real name? I'm like, yes, it's my real name.
Oh, that's so funny.
I was like, I was born at least 15 years before that character ever saw the light of day. So,
well,
it really is.
Maybe. When were you born?
84.
84?
Because Tim Drake didn't come around until the early 2000s, wasn't it?
No.
Or was it late 90s?
No, it might have been even earlier than that because it was, yeah...
I didn't think he came around until like the late 90s, early
maybe.
2000s.
You know what? I'm not. I love comics, but I'm like, I don't like the Silver Age or like, most comics that I enjoy are like 2005 and up. I'm like I'm one of those. I'm the exact thing neckbeards hate. Like I like the new Star Wars movies. I like new stuff, man. I can't help it. There's a lot of old stuff that's good, but yeah, I'm not sure when Tim Drake came around. He might have been around. No, you're probably older than Tim Drake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. I'll definitely say I'm older than him. So, but like, there's been moments where I feel like the universe is even mocking me. I posted on Twitter a while back. I'd gone to get a Coke. And I don't ever drink soda. I just needed something that day as like a pick-me-up. And I drank like 3 sips of it, and I felt like I was going to die. So
I got to look up when Tim Drake was invented. Now it's going to bug me.
To the internet.
Yeah.
But I hit the Coke machine. The can pops out. And where they've got all the, like, name your Cokes, it just said Sidekick on the Coke. And I was like, are you serious? even Coke has turned its back on me now. Yeah, I was like, I've never been trolled by a Coke machine.
Oh, that's so funny. Tim Drake, also known as Tim Wayne, fictional superhero, blah, blah, blah. 1989. Yep, you are older than Tim Drake.
I'm older than Tim Drake.
Nailing it.
It's good to officially know I got that first. yet somehow, he will always pull up at least 20 Twitter pages.
Dude.
Or 20 Google searches.
You should find Dick Grayson and Jason Todd and hang out together. That's all three Robins.
That would be like the ultimate way to.
Yeah, and I guess if you can find Damian Wayne, he's Batman's son. He's also a Robin. But
I actually knew a kid.
Whose
name was Bruce Wayne.
That really?
Yeah, his actual name was Bruce Wayne.
Go find Dick Grayson and then go find a grave for Jason Todd and take a photo in front of it. Can we please somehow make this happen?
I'm like determined to now because it would be like the ultimate nerd mindfuck on the internet.
I guarantee you there's a Jason Todd in the Salt Lake City Cemetery.
There has to be. That's such a common name.
Next time I go there to play night games, I'll let you know.
See, the thing that sucked, though, is even prior to me, there was another guy named Tim Drake that was like a prominent Catholic author.
Really?
And so he owns like a ton of like the timdrake.com and all of that. And so, like, my personal website had to, like, I don't ever update the thing, but I needed something. And so it's therealtimdrake.com.
Oh, man.
Just so it was just nice. Like, ha-ha, take that.
I had to, so I, the only other person who shares my name that's famous, I think there's a football player, but there's also a Shane Smith, the billionaire playboy who owns Vice.
Oh, that's right,
Yeah, the one percenter, the, like, genius media mogul who's, like, you know, an adventurer and, like, an awesome dude who, like, he's basically, like, our version, our generation's version of Mark Twain or whatever, you know? He's out there doing all this crazy stuff and... people, every time someone's like the other night I was, someone periscoped and he's like, I'm with Shane Smith. And they're like, Shane Smith from Vice? Like, no, you're a moron. Yeah. Well, I'm like, not Shane Smith, the billionaire genius playboy, Shane Smith, the fuck up with face tattoos who, you know, owns, a couple Warhammer models. Like, not the billionaire at all, but, or genius. Man. I got to get some of that Shane Smith money, though. Seriously.
So now, I mean, we kind of talked there about, you know, how you know, we've noticed how it can, you know, our art is able to affect others.
Yeah.
So who was some of the influences that affected you kind of growing up and inspiring you to do stuff?
Growing up, I've always been like a huge, like, I've always been obsessed with history. I don't know how... But my family moved into this house, and in that house, there was, like, this huge Civil War, American Civil War library of books. I read all those, so I was, like, obsessed with military history. So, I mean, like, I've had a ton of people inspire me for military history or history in general. A lot of comics. Growing up, I looked up to comic book characters. I had, like, a really weird childhood. Not very many, like, actual people were a big deal for me. I was a huge into music as a young man. Metallica was a big deal for me when I was young. Yeah. And I liked punk rock too. Let's see. But like, as far as comedically, the Muppets have been the biggest influence on me from day one. Like,
yeah, I definitely get that.
Man, they're so, so good. Are you excited for the new TV show?
Oh, I'm so excited for the new TV show.
I'm so, so, so
I just love seeing just, like, the trailers and in the direction that they're taking it, where it's kind of more of, like, the mockumentary of workplace comedy.
Exactly.
Like, it's so perfect. Because, yeah, they couldn't replicate another Muppet show or something like that. No. They needed something fresh.
I mean, they could,
fresh.
They could do a Muppets show, and maybe people like you and I who are fans would love it, but not enough... No regular person's going to be like, oh, I'm just going to watch The Muppet Show.
Yeah.
But like, oh man, The Muppets are so good. I love everything they do. And then, like, as I got older, I started to become, you know, affected by, like, more actual comedians. Like, Pete Holmes is a huge influence on me. So, I love that guy. TJ Miller.
Oh, I love TJ.
TJ's so good. His style bounces between, like, a regular... kind of like in reality, you know, talking about observational stuff, and then he gets really abstract, and then he does like performance pieces, and he's like, he's so good. I like Chris D'Elia, and then all the regular stuff, you know. I like guys like Kevin Hart, but I don't know, man, my inspirations growing up were all over the place, mostly fictional. Like, I've always been a guy who has no problem looking up to fictional people. So, I don't know.
And I don't see there being any problem looking up to somebody that's fictional, because they have, I mean, they're a lovable character because they have those redeeming qualities that any real life person's going to have. I mean, any writer that creates a character,
for sure,
they're basing it on either redeeming qualities or qualities that are terrible that they've recognized in somebody.
Oh, man. Have you ever seen do you remember the movie The Page Master?
He's like sucked into the book. Yeah, you were probably the only person that has ever referenced that movie that I can, like, completely relate to, because I loved that movie. And I have made a reference to that to somebody once. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Yeah, man.
The idea of, like, getting sucked into the all book world, like, exists somewhere. I love that. Like, I still hold that idea today. I'm like, no, it's happening somewhere. You know, like, it's real to me, okay? Yeah, I was just playing that video game on Super Nintendo the other day.
Oh, really?
Page Master video game. Yeah, I collect, like, old school games.
Oh, that's awesome.
Super and regular Nintendo and Sega, so, yeah. Super nerdy over here. I mean, you look like you got it going on, too. Dude, are those, like, the 1990s Ninja Turtle action videos?
They are. Those are the ones from Secret of the Ooze. And what sucks is Michelangelo's missing his head.
Oh.
I have no idea what happened to Michelangelo's head.
What? That's the one from... the T3, right?
Yeah, the Samurai one.
Samurai. We're looking at, I mean, do people know what's going on with your toy collection? We're looking at Ninja Turtle toys.
I've meant to like, do a Vine or something of the room, because people always mention it, and there's always more and more that gets...
Yeah.
That gets added to it.
Bebop, Rocksteady, Krang. Yeah. Dude, I almost got a Krang tattoo in my stomach, but I chickened out. I decided to go a different direction with it.
That would have been pretty awesome.
Yeah. Though. Dude, Krang is so good. Yeah, it's awesome. When I was a kid, I used to have the case, like the Ninja Turtle case, and then it had like all the slots for the action figures in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I had the Foot Clan case with Bebop and Rocksteady and stuff. I have no idea how I got it, but I used to have like all the action figures and the turtle wagon.
Yeah, I had the turtle wagon that shot the pizzas out of it.
Yeah, and it had like the two little rockets also. So good. Man, I wish I had kept any amount of my toys or magic cards.
Yeah.
Dude, I'd be rich.
I don't know what happened to some of my toys. And I was asking my brother the other day, I was like, we have some of those somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And my brother says he knows where they're at in our parents' basement. And he's yet to show me where, because I know, like, one of the things I wanted was when Jurassic Park came out and they had the dino damage.
Yes, I remember those. The T-Rex's ribs came out.
Yeah, and, like, we have all of them somewhere.
Oh, so cool.
So, which I heard something, I think it was on Radio from Hell, they were talking about, like, most disappointing kids' toys. They were reading an article from, like, who knows, BuzzFeed or something like that. And those were on there, and I was like, what?
Yeah, those were great.
Those were amazing.
Do you remember the commercial of the T-Rex, and then the kid has the raptor, and it eats the side of the T-Rex? He's all, so good, man. Dude, I love toy. I, straight up, not a joke, I still play with action figures. The same way, like not like the way most adults would imagine, like, just looking at it fondly, remembering, like, no, I'm actually like, doot, 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 I'm Michelangelo. And then, like, dude, I'll take them into the shower with me. That's the secret to a good bathroom situation. Have an action figure in your tub. Take a bath. Play with your action figures. What's that that shop that all the girls like with bath bombs or whatever?
Lush.
Lush. Yeah, fuck Lush. See, girls are like, bath bombs, they spend all their money. Buy some Batman Beyond action figures, get into the bathtub, have a real good time. None of this, like, children's chemistry set stuff. Yeah. I'm talking about Ninja Turtles in the bathtub fighting Batman.
My wife actually went to Lush one time. She wanted to see what it was. Somebody had suggested one of those bath bombs, didn't do shit.
Yeah.
But their whole thing at Lush is that it's all organic.
Yeah,
it's
they say you can eat all of it.
Yeah.
And I ate some of it in front of a lady once, and she was not stoked. Yeah.
Well, see, my wife's checking out at the register, and I look to the right of me, and there's a soap that's called Caca Noir. And I just stared at it for a second, and I looked at the cashier, and I was like, so everything here is organic, right? She was like, well, yeah. And I was like, because Caca Noir, doesn't that mean black shit? And my wife was just like, are you serious? And the girl got so uncomfortable. And she's like, well, I don't think that's... And I was like, well, no, because caca's shit.
Yeah.
And noir is black in French.
Yeah.
I was like, so it's like a interracial dump? Like, is that what you got in here?
Oh, man. Yeah, my fiance is way into that store. She's all about the bath bombs. I swear, like, I don't get it, but whatever. Bubbles are so much better.
Yeah.
And yeah, why some Mr. Bubble?
If you, I mean, Scuba Steve. If you've got a Scuba Steve.
Oh, my God. See, people, your bath game is weak, ladies. You need to get some. You need Mr. Bubble, and you need action figures and army men. And or army men. Either way. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, that's... See, we understand.
Yeah, yeah.
They're right next to Lush. There should just be a bath toy store.
When was the last time you actually took a bath? As an adult,
took a bath as an adult, it's probably been about a year.
Dude, yeah, you got to get on that. Baths are the... Though it has been summer, we're in Salt Lake, it's hot. Baths are like, you know, taking a hot bath isn't super cool, but... Oh, man.
It does need to happen again. I need to have an action figure bath session.
It's true. You really do. Just chill in there with some music, action figure, or like throw on some cartoons. I'll just take it back old school.
Yeah. There's pictures of me in a bath on Facebook. I forgot about those.
Like as a child or an adult?
Oh, no, as an adult. As an adult.
Okay.
When we were filming the job interview web series, my character gets walked in on a candlelit bath by one of the other characters, and he thinks that like he's having somebody over, and it turns out he's having pizza brought to him.
Oh.
But yeah, there's pictures of me in a bath, and it's a very awkward photo too because it was a bubble bath, but the bubbles found their way around my chest where just my nipple is randomly just okay. like hanging out.
Yeah.
And it's just like the most awkward just hello.
Oh man.
So as we kind of wrap things up, I mean you mentioned your tattoos. I know you just had a tattoo appointment today, didn't you?
I had one and I rescheduled because of money and also because I wanted to make it here on time. Oh,
well,
yeah, yeah.
Well, awesome.
Yeah, right? I'm very punctual.
So now, I mean, you've got a lot of tattoos.
It's true.
What was the first tattoo you got and kind of what started the whole process with
them? The first tattoo I ever had was these four letters on my wrist. It says live, love, burn, die. It started because I grew up ever since, I mean, like the very, very youngest I can remember. I was a metalhead and I was into punk rock and alternative music and alternative culture growing up. Dudes, like my favorite people were like, you know, the surly sailor with tattoos, yeah. like... You know, badasses with tattoos. I was always into it, like bikers. I grew up around bikers and stuff. I knew a lot of people. So growing up, I just wanted to be a guy who had a lot of tattoos. And, you know, I'm an adult now. I graduated middle school. I don't have to take shit from anyone. And so I tattoo the entirety of my body, basically. Yeah, I don't know. It's just something, even when I was very young, I was like, man, it'd be cool to have tattoos, and so I just made it happen and went crazy with it. Yeah, pro tip to people who want tattoos, maybe don't go so crazy, like don't tattoo your face, but you know, get out there, do what you want to do. But
do you have a favorite tattoo?
I have so many that I like so much. I really like my hand is Darth Vader. I really like my hand tattoo. It's just Darth Vader's helmet. I like my knuckles. They say fruit boot. I know you're saying, Shane, that can't fit on 8 fingers, and I'm not a mutant. I don't have, like, 10 fingers or whatever, or 9. I would need 9. But the U has an umlaut over it. If you don't know what an umlaut is, Google that. But I like it because it's original. Yeah. I don't think anyone would ever have that tattoo ever. And I love to skate, so...
What does fruit boot mean?
It's like a slang term that's derogatory that skateboarders use to make fun of rollerbladers. And basically, we were like, yeah, sure, fruit boot, okay. And we, like, took the term and started using it ourselves.
That's funny.
So I am a fruit booter, and so I got it tattooed on my knuckles. I think it's hilarious. I wanted something happy. Everyone has tattoos on their knuckles, and it's like life and death, or... Yeah. You know, like, rock and roll. They're so serious. I actually have a friend who has rock and roll tattooed on his knuckles. You're cool, but yeah. Anyway, but my knuckle tattoo, I wanted it to be something original that no one else would ever have, and I wanted it to make me happy when I looked at it, so.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So now what is this one right here? Is that the Star of David? It looks like a Cyberman? Or...
It is. This is a Space Marine from Warhammer 40,000 with a Star of David on his forehead. He's just... Basically some random design I came up with. I like Warhammer and I'm Jewish, so it awesome. Kind of encompasses all that. I got a Pokeball over here doing stuff.
I got the old school Nintendo controller there. Yeah,
old school Nintendo controller repping it with the 3 X's for straight edge.
Awesome.
I got a celestial being tattoo from Gundam 00. Some TIE fighters, a Triforce, a heart container, Alkaline Trio.
That was pretty awesome. Middle alkaline art, yeah.
The Crimson Ghost, some other random stuff. I've got, what else do I have? I mean, I have Darth Maul.
Oh, that is awesome.
Yeah, I got a lot of nerdy tattoos, and I like them all. My stomach is probably my absolute favorite now that I think about it. Just because it was so painful and ridiculous. It goes from my belly button to the very top of my chest. It goes over my nipples. It goes onto my side. It was like a massive project, an undertaking, if you will. And it was so painful. Now that it's done, it's my favorite because I know I'll never have to do it again. But, yeah. So, do you have tattoos?
Not yet.
Yeah.
So
you really want to disappoint your parents.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. Get a tattoo. Show your parents. They're very disappointed. Introduce them to me. They immediately are like... okay. It could be so much worse. We're okay with this. Tim, you do you. And then they let you go, and they're not mad anymore.
Now, the one that I want to start with is I want to start it right here, but the Doctor Who Pulp Fiction. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
It has Matt Smith and David Tennant with their sonic screwdrivers out in the famed Pulp Fiction with the guns drawn, but okay. It's Matt Smith and David Tennant. All right. That's what I'm planning to start with.
I appreciate that.
So, and I saw it, I was like, that needs to be a tattoo. That is my anticipated first.
All right, cool. It's a good first.
Yeah, I'm happy with that decision as a first.
Yeah, is it? You want your first? Make sure your first tattoo is such that if you never got another tattoo, that it would be cool to have just that one.
Yeah.
You know, I know people who get one and they're like, ah, damn, I have to like fix it or put more around it because it doesn't look right by itself. So, don't do that. Very cool, man.
Awesome. Well, it's been great talking to you for the hour here.
Yeah,
so
of course.
It's good to finally get to know you after seeing so much online about you. So.
Yeah. And I'm sure I'll see you at your live show. We'll be hanging out, doing stuff. I'll definitely be there.
Yeah, definitely come. It'll be a good time. It'll be a really good time. We've got some fun giveaways that are being put together right now for it. So where can everybody find you on social media and stuff to follow your comedy?
On Twitter and Instagram and Vine, it's all the same thing. It's Shaydozer, Shaydozer. I don't have a website because I am a moron and I don't know how to make it. And then I have a Facebook. It's just Shane Smith, Shayne Smith. It's not a fan site. I'm not that popular yet, but with your help, maybe. I mean, I don't. But yeah, those are all the places you can find me. I try to be funny on the internet. Sometimes I'm mostly just weird. But yeah.
Awesome. So cool. Well, thanks a lot for coming. And we'll definitely promote any of your shows coming up here, so people can go see you live. So
yeah, awesome. Thank you very much.
Cool,
man.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Shane.